The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Even in the middle of justice being served, still, the government has to say, well, we're not going to do everything the right way. Even in the middle of people being made whole after having suffered for years at the hands of the government, still, the government has to step in and say, well, not quite. Hey there, it's Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck today. Appreciate you joining me. Over the last couple of months, some things have been going on with regards to a story that I'm sure you have felt very passionately about, but maybe you haven't thought a whole lot about in the last couple of years because it just kind of slowly faded away. But there are people who still lived the stories every day, who still suffered at the hands of the government. And finally, they are getting some justice. I'm talking about the Tea Party targeting scandals of the IRS. If you don't recall what happened, it started in February and March of 2010. The government decided they were going to treat conservative organizations that were looking for a tax-exempt status, which was certainly within their right, but ones that were based on conservative ideology, they were going to give them extra scrutiny. Now, the motivation for why they did that has still not been proven, but I think it's pretty obvious it was done for political reasons. Why wouldn't it have been political reasons if the party in power, both the White House, the House and Senate, had a different ideology than those groups? Why wouldn't it have been politically motivated? That they said, we're going to target those groups and delay or deny their tax-exempt status. Why would they do that? Well, I think it's pretty obvious they were being punitive. They were trying to punish those groups for having a different ideology and then maybe even gain a political advantage in the midterm elections of 2010. Before we go any farther and tell you the update on the story, I do want to check in with Tom Zawatowski from the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good morning, Doc. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Tom's group just settled with the government, right? They finally have admitted wrongdoing and there was a settlement?
Absolutely. There were two cases that were settled, one in the district court in Washington, D.C., the other one in Cincinnati in a class action lawsuit. And in those two suits, we got the IRS to admit that they actually did target us, that was wrong, that they would never do it again. And we got them to apologize. And now I can also announce, because it wasn't clear when settlement was announced, that we are also going to get a $3.5 million settlement from the government that will go to some of these Tea Party groups that were targeted.
Now, is that $3 million settlement, that is strictly for your group, or is that all Tea Party groups? This is just yours, right?
No. I wish that were true. No, it's for all the groups that were in the class action lawsuit.
Okay.
And there's literally hundreds of groups. But again, you know, that's the point I want your listeners to know. We never filed these suits because we wanted to make money. Because think about it. You know, you're a conservative. I'm a conservative. Where's this money coming from? It's coming from us. It's
right.
Like suing yourself, right?
Right?
So, you know, we really weren't interested in this settlement, though a lot of people felt that it wouldn't mean anything if there wasn't some penalty. So we're happy for that. The most important thing we wanted to do is stop them from ever doing this to anyone else again. And because of the suit in D.C. in the district court, where you basically have a federal judge that, you know, has said you can never target citizens because of their political beliefs again or their name, like Tea Party. If anybody is targeted in the future, they can go to a federal court and waive our settlement right in the face of the judge and say, you got to stop this. They're coming after me because I have Patriot in my name of my group, or I stand for the Constitution, or I have a political ideology the government doesn't like. And so that's a great, you know, victory for us. And we're happy about that. But we're not so happy about what's going on with Lois Lerner and the people who are behind this.
Yeah. So real quick, yours is not the only set. There are other Tea Party groups that have organized and sued and objected differently, and there's still settlements unfolding with them too, right?
They are just about done. All the suits are coming to a conclusion, and what's good is that the government admitted that not only didn't Mrs. Lerner stop the targeting, okay, contradicting Obama administration's claim that there was no targeting, but they also that she, Mrs. Lerner, hid it from her superiors. And that's just BS, Doc, because she didn't hide it from anybody. She was part of the Obama political machine, and that's why she doesn't want her testimony to become public.
So the big update is this has been rolling on over the last couple of weeks, and the settlements are all coming to a head. Lois Lerner now has filed to keep her materials, the transcripts of her depositions, and also Holly Paz, keep those secret from the American public. Is that right?
That's exactly right, and I love the statement they said, or else, so if these became public, or else they could spur an enraged public to retaliate. Doesn't that make you want to see what the heck's in that testimony?
Right, okay, first, yeah, it makes me want, in fact, it's telling me there's something in there, otherwise why would you care? And number two, not telling me also is enraging me.
Absolutely correct, because this is a public employee. This is someone we paid, and that makes it different. We have a right to know what they did. And this entire quote-unquote investigation that the Tea Parties have tried to facilitate really hasn't gone to the point of who did it, why did they do it, what, for instance, what happened, Doc, to all that opposition research, which is exactly what it was, when they said to Tom Zawistowski and the Ohio Liberty Coalition, we want to know, who gives you money? Which members? Which people are members of your group? Who speaks to your group? What did they tell you? You know, what is your political plan for the future? Where did that information go after Lois Lerner and Holly Paz got a lot of Tea Party groups to submit that? Who got that information? Well, no one's ever investigated that, and that's why we need Jeff Sessions to get his head out of his posterior and understand that this woman needs to be not only investigated by the FBI, but prosecuted.
Yeah, I still, that's the part that even if they apologize to all the Tea Party groups, and if there were a way, what there's not, to truly make everybody whole, because there were individuals that were targeted as well for extra audits and all this stuff, even if they were able to give them their pain, suffering, and money back somehow, all after all these years, and admit wrongdoing, and even if it never happened in the future, there still is something missing. That is punishment for the people that are responsible for this.
Absolutely. When she's worried, Lois Lerner's lawyer saying she's worried about physical harm. The only physical harm those of us in the Tea Party want to see to come to Lois Lerner is that she'd be forced to wear an orange jumpsuit and serve some hard time. That's the physical harm that we want to see imposed upon her, because what they did were criminal acts. There's no doubt about it. So the cover-up is what's really the story here. And so far, we haven't been able to get to the real details of this case.
Talking with Tom Zeef in the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. Tom, who is question 26? It was mentioned as question number 26. There was somebody that was sent out. The IRS gave these forms to everybody, to a bunch of different people. They said, tell us, it is question after question. This affiliation with this group and your past, all of these weird things. And one of them, and I can't remember his name, specifically mentioned as question number 26, how do you know this person? Because they were involved in other tea parties. Targeted an American citizen saying, how do you know this person?
Well, see, now that's a really interesting twist. And it only happened one time. And that was the Liberty Township Tea Party in Ohio got a question about a guy named Justin Binnick,
Justin Binnick Thomas.
Right. Justin Binnick Thomas was he did seminars for tea parties about public relations and things, like here's how you message, here's how you do a press release and all that. And he had spoken to their group, and in the IRS questions about whether that group should get their C4 status, their tax exempt status, they specifically asked him, do you know this person? And what's your involvement with him? As if he was, Putin, right?
Right, or Bin Laden or somebody, right?
Right, exactly, right. Give it up. And that's the kind of crazy stuff that happened. And we also, you mentioned that people were targeted. And George Brenneman and his wife were audited personally by the IRS, and the IRS agent said to them they were audited because his wife was the Cincinnati Tea Party's treasurer, and she was keeping their books. And so they audited them personally.
It's amazing.
And admitted it. So this is what we've been fighting. And Doc, I want your audience to know, we've been winning, right? You know, it's not easy to take on the federal government, let alone the IRS, and win. We spent 5 years, tens of millions of dollars in legal fees fighting this.
To get the right outcome. Tom, it must have been 2013 or possibly 2014. And I went to speak at a Northern Virginia gathering of Tea Party Patriot groups. And I was in this restaurant. We had the side room as a meeting space, let's say roughly 50 or so people in there. And it was one of the most profound moments for me personally through this entire thing, because I was speechifying, talking about some of the failures. And in the middle of it, I headed down a road and then paused and said, you know what, let me ask, because I've heard stories about people being targeted for audits. And I said, just, you know, how many people in here have been audited, you know, recently within the last couple of years that had never been audited before? And I mean, I knew a couple people were going to hold up their hand. It was virtually everybody in the room. I was so shocked that it included almost everybody that came from all different places, meeting different Patriot groups, that they had all been audited, and many of them twice.
See, and Doc, these aren't people who are, you know, Dick Nixon going after, you know, some head of some big corporation, right, or some money. These are moms and dads, aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas. This is common American citizens who were doing what? Simply expressing their political views and fighting for the Constitution. And they were treated like criminals. And so, folks, you know, when you're listening to Doc, he knows, and we know, this was all done so that Barack Obama could win re-election in 2012, because they saw what we did in 10. The Tea Party was responsible for that sweep of taking over the House that surprised them. And so this was their plan. And again, we had people literally close their organization, just shut down. We had board members resign from the groups because their lawyers were saying, hey, I think you're going to come after your company because you're on the Tea Party board.
So how
we had fundraising just completely disappear, Doc, because people didn't want to give us money because they were afraid the IRS would find out and then target them.
So how do we get the federal government to say no, release the information, the depositions of Lois Lerner and Holly Paz?
Well, I understand that the Justice Department is on our side with this. The Trump administration backs making the documents public. I understand from the attorneys in the case that really Lerner and Paz have not even come close proving that there's any real danger to them.
All right.
Okay. And so the Cincinnati Inquirer, the newspaper in Cincinnati, they have been fighting this very hard because this is a public employee. We have a right to know. And boy, when she says, you know, she's afraid it's going to spur enraged public to retaliate.
There's got to be
something. Now I want to know anymore.
Yep.
So we're going to be pushing for it.
So these are the low-level employees out of Cincinnati, right? That's
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
That's right.
Exactly. All right,
we also want this stuff out,
right,
because they feel their reputation is dead. They want this out, too.
All right. Tom Zawotowski, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us with the update.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, Doc. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone at The Blaze and to all of your listeners. We have a lot to be thankful for, as crazy as this world is.
Thanks so much. Tom Z from the Portage County Tea Party. Get a break and back with more. It's Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck today.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Doc Thompson in for Glenn today. Thanks for joining me. If you want to join the program via the telephone, 888-727-BECK. 888-727-BECK. You can also join me on Twitter. I'll interact with you on Twitter. Just follow at Doc Thompson Show, at Doc Thompson Show. And if you want to use the hashtag What I Learned Today, that's what we use throughout throughout our morning broadcast on the Blaze Radio Network to interact with you. I'll peruse those as well. So it's at Doc Thompson Show, hashtag What I Learned Today. The Lois Lerner situation right now, where she is arrogantly, brazenly asking for that information not to go public, is, I think, the biggest problem. The The biggest problem is not that they targeted. It's the attitude where they think they have the right to target, where they believe they're above the law, where Congress or members, because remember, Lois Lerner was a director, members of the government, directors, believe they can do whatever they want. It's virtually impossible to get fired from a government agency. You know how many things you have to screw up and how many times? There are stories of people doing really significant, stealing and not showing up to work and all kinds of stuff for years, sometimes having been reprimanded dozens of times and still not fired.
Well, look at the Veterans Administration.
Perfect example. Veterans Administration, my buddy Chris Cruz is here now. He's regularly on the Morning Blaze as well with me. The Veterans Administration, you're right. They actually
killed people,
veterans. And then the people who lost their jobs, some of them sued and got their jobs back recently.
Or someone went on leave or on suspension, paid.
Paid suspension.
And some of them got taken out of their position, but still got their retirement.
Retirement, yeah. So, well, a couple of the people that Donald Trump fired, essentially, when he took over, he said, these people who killed veterans, they got to go, sued, and ended up, they're working again in the Veterans Administration. Some of them get moted. They want to pretend it's a demotion. It's not a demotion. It's a motion. They just move them somewhere else. Then you've got the Fast and the Furious program. Some of those cats got promoted. They moved them back to D.C. as opposed to the field offices in the Southwest, and they got promoted. Lois Lerner, she was allowed to retire a couple of months later. When all this broke, she stayed on because that extra couple of months, she reached a new threshold with the amount of years worked and got a higher retirement. She got more of your money. But the attitude where they say, we can do this and you shouldn't know. Throw out everything else, folks. Throw out who they targeted or why. Left versus right, Democrat versus Republican. Throw it all out. Throw out the details of what Tom Z and I just talked about, all of that, and boil it down to this moment. Lois Lerner is suing to keep you from having information about your government. Information that is not a national security matter. It's not the movement of the Sixth Fleet. It's not the nuclear launch codes. She's suing so you don't know how your government operates. Do you think less or more transparency is a good thing? Garbage in, garbage out. Our representative style government relies, demands that we be involved. And if we're not, we will get garbage. If you do not have information and you're asked to make a decision, what's the likelihood you're going to get that decision right? If you only have 2% of the information, then you get all the information. You're like, oh, okay. Well, I would have made a different decision then. How can you be expected to vote and make a good choice next time? When a politician, because by the way, we are just months away from the campaigning for the midterm elections. Because spring starts primaries. This spring, you're just months away from primaries. These politicians are going to speechify. They're going to send you emails. They're going to stand in front of you at town hall gatherings and tell you, vote for me because here's my plan. We need to do this, 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 and that. How do you know if they're right that that's what needs to be done? How do you know if you can trust them? How do you know who to vote for? If you don't have good information. Lois Lerner is asking you to have less information. That by itself is an absolute and outright failure.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi there, I'm Doc Thompson in for Glenn today. We got some calls to get to. 888-727-BECK. It's 888-727-BECK. We're talking about, finally, there is some justice with the Tea Parties being targeted 5-6 years ago. Well, that's when we found out about it anyways. Some justice, but still, who is going to be held accountable? Let's go to Connecticut now. Line 51, Barbara, how are you? Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Hey, Barbara.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. What are your thoughts on Lois Lerner?
Well, I'm appalled after reading some of her emails and the way she spoke about conservatives.
You mean throughout the process when they started targeting?
Yeah, well, somehow, I don't know whether it was through WikiLeaks or what, but I read some of her emails, and they were horrific. And I'm also shocked that the IRS employees are all unionized, and you cannot fire them. And they don't have to testify. They don't have to answer any questions. I am appalled that our government is run by these people, and most of the government employees tend to be Democrats, and they all protect each other.
Well, because ideologically, yeah, supporting big government's going to keep your job. And so,
that's
yeah,
right.
So there's a breakdown. I mean, our civil servant system is better than the spoil system of the 1800s. It had even worse problems, but I still don't think we've solved the system or come up with the proper system
yet. No, we haven't. And the Obama culture, because this is the Obama culture, targeting people, and this is what the Clintons also did.
Barbara, I really appreciate your call. Thank you so much. Let me give people an update of how this whole thing played out as well. Just the beginnings of the Tea Party targeting. And it does tie in not just to government workers and wrongdoing, but specifically the unions. The chronological layout of how this happened, the timeline, began, from what we can tell, in early 2010. February, March 2010. An email from an exempt organization's determinations manager. So somebody who decides or works in the department who decides who's exempt, who gets that tax-exempt status. Discussed via email the Tea Party applications. We know the manager wrote, "Please let Washington know about this potentially embarrassing political case involving a, quote, Tea Party organization. Recent media attention of this type of organization indicates to me that this is a high-profile case." Remember, the Tea Parties were really getting attention in early 2010. Having started in the final year of the George W. Bush administration, even prior to the announcement of TARP, but that's what really fanned the flames. In 2008, during the campaign, when President Bush said, "I'm a free market guy, I don't want to do this TARP thing, but we got to, I'm a free market guy, but I'm going to do something that's not free market," which, by the way, we don't know what would have happened if we would have survived. You don't understand, Doc, it'll be apocalyptic for the economy if we don't just spend a really big number, as they said. And they did. Almost $800 billion. And the Tea Parties popped up, and they started getting attention. A coworker responded to that in February or March saying, "I think sending it up here," meaning to D.C., "is a good idea given the potential for media interest." Then, just weeks later, March 31st and April 1st of 2010, Colleen Kelly, who is president of the National Treasury Union, Employees Union, the NTEU, that's the union that represents the IRS employees and dozens of other government agencies. She went on March 31st to the White House to meet with President Obama. The next day, April 1st, IRS employees began targeting the Tea Party groups. Isn't that awfully coincidental? The next day, it just played out. She visits Obama, and the next day, they start targeting them. It was April 1st, 2010. IRS employees began applying that extra scrutiny to the tax-exempt status application from all the conservative groups. And when they first began, they sought any group and gave them extra scrutiny that had the word Tea Party, Patriot, or 912. Anybody that had the phrases like "take back our country," "we the people," or mentioned constitutional or the Constitution. 912, the 912 groups, as started partially by Glenn Beck. June 6, 2010, just a couple months later, IRS official Holly Paz sent an email to an IRS lawyer called Stephen Gradinsky, and he's based in D.C. In the email, she wrote, "Let Cindy Sharon know how we have been handling Tea Party applications in the last few months." And then he replied and confirmed that the exempt organization technical unit, the EOTU, was designing the targeting. They have made the plan on how to target. The EOT is, he wrote, working on the Tea Party applications in coordination with Cincy. Remember those low-level employees out of Cincinnati? "We are developing a few applications here in D.C. and providing copies of our development letters with the agent to use as examples in the development of their cases," meaning cases to deny them tax-exempt status. A couple months later, August of 2010, the IRS issued its first BOLO alert. That's be on the lookout for various Tea Party movement. Quote, the various in the Tea Party movement that are looking for 501c3 and 501c4 status. The IRS then started flagging applications by organization that A, addressed any issue as a government spending, government debt, or taxes issue as part of their ideas. B, anybody that was promoting the use of education, advocacy, or lobbying to, quote, make America a better place to live, better America, take back our America, any of these things. And C, criticizing anyone or criticizing a country or anything that the Obama administration is doing.
You know, it's funny because, well, it's not funny, but as you're going down that list, my military mindset is like, we're targeting terrorists or something.
Right.
That's all I could think
Chris
of.
Chris Cruz served in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
And the way you're running it down, it's like, oh, we're going to target this. We're going to look for this keyword. Right.
Well, even take the word target out, but just we're scrutinizing, we're investigating. It's what, like, is this, the mob?
You would think that these people, you know, the Tea Partiers, all these people, they're a terrorist.
Right.
From those emails.
What bad were they doing? It was a different political ideology. That's it. It wasn't even based on race, where nowadays they're like, you don't understand, that's supporting racism and white supremacy and whatever. I mean, eventually they labeled the Tea Parties that. But the Tea Party didn't even have that. You know, they hadn't had enough time to brand it all of those horrible ways yet. Those inaccurate but horrible ways. This was still, if you criticize Obama, want lower taxes, believe in free markets and freedom, go after them. Couple months later, October 2010, Jack Smith of the Department of Justice, specifically the public integrity section of the Department of Justice, arranged a meeting and asked Lois Lerner to help him build criminal cases against conservative nonprofit groups because they were conducting political activity. Now, remember, there are different statuses, and that's why there's a 501c3 and c4 and whatever. Some can be more political, less political, whatever. But he wanted criminal cases against them. Winter of 2010, just weeks later, Judith Kindle, who's a senior advisor to Lois Lerner, she told the IRS attorney Carter Hull, who was overseeing the review of some of these tax-exempt applications for Tea Party groups, that the IRS's chief counsel office will henceforth need to review all applications from conservative groups before they can be approved. So not only were they doing the extra scrutiny, you can't even approve them. It has to go through this new chain of command. According to Carter Hall, the attorney, that was the first time in his 48-year career at the IRS that he had been instructed to forward any tax-exempt applications to another office. In almost 50 years, that had never happened. February 2000. And by the way, the reason that's significant, there are claims that during the George W. Bush administration, they used the IRS to target people. It was never proven. It was just a claim because people wanted to misdirect. But here's a guy who worked in it said that's never happened in almost 50 years. February 2011, Lois Lerner advised her staff via email that the Tea Party matter is, quote, very dangerous. And Tea Party groups seek tax-exempt applications could end up being the, quote, vehicle to go to court to get more clarity on the 2010 Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance rules. So at very least, that shows she was aware that this was going on. Proven right there. February 11th then, a year after all this began, an FCC, Federal Elections Commission investigator, asks Lois Lerner about the status of tax-exempt applications of the American Future Fund. That's a conservative group. He asked about their tax-exempt status. They began a communication, sharing information. The American Fund Future Fund got a questionnaire from the IRS asking additional information. But here's the thing. The FEC and the IRS are not allowed to share information like that. It's illegal. Under Section 6103 of the Internal Revenue Code, they cannot do it. But they did. This shows conspiracy, not just with multiple employees, but multiple branches of the government. A Republican chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee at the time, David Camp, at that point, June 3rd, 2011, more than a year later, after hearing from a bunch of people, sent a letter to the IRS's commissioner at the time, Douglas Shulman, and said, hey, what's going on with all of this stuff? In total, members of Congress sent at least seven letters. Still, no answers. A couple weeks later, June 13th, 2011, Lois Lerner's computer allegedly crashed, causing all emails that she had sent and received between January 2009 and April 2011 to go missing. Now, this began in February of 2010. Those are the first inklings we have. Her computer allegedly crashed in June of 2011. What time frame crashed? 2009 to just weeks before. That was all lost. Wow. Such a terrible break for people trying to prove that they were wrong in this. January, about 6 months later, 2012, the IRS began sending follow-up letters, all those, you know, extra questionnaires, asking things. In some cases, they asked about their prayers, wanted to know what their prayers were at their meeting. They asked them their, all names of all their donors. They wanted the donor lists, an explanation of where the groups stand on issues, asking them about specific issues. What is your political philosophy about this? February 22nd, 2012, a year later, Lois Lerner sent an email to the IRS, an email to an IRS information technology specialist, the IT people there, with the message line, virus on home PC. She indicated that she keeps work information on her home computer and that some of it had been lost too. Mm. I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to keep that stuff in your home computer. I think no. That's a violation as well.
Yeah, because I remember when in the military, there's some things that you couldn't bring home. Even if you wanted to bring home, there it was your computer was not set up with security, you know, protocols so people don't hack you in.
This goes on and on and on over the course of years. I'm not going to give you, I'm going to share one more. February 24th then, 2 days after she told the information on her home computer was lost, during a briefing on the follow-up letters at an Oversight and Government Reform Committee, staffers asked Lois Lerner whether the criteria for evaluating tax-exempt application had changed, and she said no. Clearly lying because she knew it was. I just proved it to you over and over. Quick break, back with more. Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We have to demand that we have, that we get the information that Lois Lerner is trying to keep. Her actions, activities, what she did and what others did, what we know. Listen, there's going to be plenty we don't know that is probably going to be pretty bad. But the stuff we do have, the stuff that is contained in the documents, the depositions, we must have. It is a matter of America's survival. When we start heading down the road, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, where some people can act inappropriately, possibly illegally, and we never get that information, the whole system is at risk. The entire thing is at risk. What we have is a very fragile, a delicate system of government that requires us to be informed, make the best choices we can, and hopefully get some moral people to actually serve. If it starts to break down, it's not going to stop. For you liberals out there, for you Democrats that are still playing the game and saying, of course, gee, we shouldn't have that information, don't release that information, simply because you don't want Obama's legacy tarnished because you politically agree with Lois Lerner. You're setting yourself up for a whole lot of bad.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Hi there, it's Doc Thompson in for Glenn, regularly heard on the Blaze Radio Network. More information about me by going to theblazeradio.com. Throughout my morning broadcast, we have a couple of running themes and things we like to do, and one of them is to promote America and the idea of entrepreneurship, day in and day out. It's been one of the keys to America's success, and I think it's also one of the keys to returning America to some of the past glory we've had, some of the economic success. If you've paid attention and looked at studies over the last 20, 30 years, our level of freedom has dropped. Our economic power has dropped. Our educational standards have dropped. And they continue to. Now, we had built up so much steam in the previous couple of hundred years that we had a long way to drop. And in some of these categories, we still are competitive. But it's going to keep dropping unless we do something. Dance with the one that brung you. And what brought us to where we are is freedom and free markets, and entrepreneurship. Something that we have boiled down to the entrepreneurial spirit, dreaming and doing. Lots of people dream. You probably dream every day. You drive down the street and you're like, you know, I've always wanted to open that hot dog stand. I've always wanted to go and do this. I've always wanted to start that company that does this. And you don't do it. But for some, they're actually driven, obsessed, passionate about something where that idea grows and grows, that they just have to act on it. And they do, many times failing. You know the stories of people like Milton Hershey who start company after company after company before they started. You know the story of Edison and the light bulb trying 5,000 times before he found the right filament for the incandescent light bulb. For whatever the reason, they're just driven to do. We need to teach that. We need to grow that. We need to understand it. So how can I help you? Well, one of the biggest challenges we face when starting a company, even if it's just a side business to supplement your income for your family, is marketing, is promotion. How do you get attention without having millions of dollars to advertise and cut through? Well, once you get some attention, a little bit of the word out there, you know, it can grow. Word of mouth. It's such a good product or an idea or service that it can grow. But how do you start? Well, social media, great. There's a million other people trying as well. Well, on our morning broadcast, we offer people some free airtime. Free. Just to promote their products. We called it Building America. In fact, if you go on Twitter and look up the hashtag Building America, you can go back and find great products and services. Sometimes those people have such success, they end up becoming advertisers on our program. Sometimes they don't. But we try to help them. And along the way, our listeners get some good content. They get to hear about good products and services. They hopefully get to hear about companies and a good story about how they started. I mean, how many movies have been made about people who've started companies and musicians and actors and how they made it and their climb and rise to fame? Well, you get a good story along the way and hopefully some inspiration. We are just days away from Black Friday, one of the biggest capitalist days of the year in America, where everybody runs out to their retailers, starts buying things. And then Cyber Monday, a little under a week from now. We're at that time of the year when a lot of people in the retail world make their money that sets them up for the next year or don't. So this Friday, as I fill in on the Glenn Beck program, as I've done in the last couple of years, I'm going to extend my Building America idea for my morning broadcast, and I'm going to offer you free airtime on Glenn Beck's program. As long as he doesn't stop me. And as far as I know, he's held up in a bunker somewhere right now, roasting a turkey. As long as he doesn't stop me, I'm going to give away free commercials on this program. And all you have to do is call up Friday morning, and I'll give you 60 seconds to promote your business. Now, if you don't get through, still use the hashtag Building America and tell us about your business, your products or services. And if you hear good stuff and you don't remember, look it up. Hashtag Building America. That's my commitment to you. How can I help you promote your business? How can we together grow America and again become leaders in the world of development, entrepreneurs, and just fostering good ideas? Joining me now is Michael Sonnenfeld, author of Think Bigger and 39 Other Winning Strategies from Successful Entrepreneurs. He's also the founder of Tiger 21 Investment Group. Hi, Michael. How are you, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me, Doc.
I enjoyed having you so much on my morning broadcast a few months back. I'm like, I've got to get you on this week as we start talking about entrepreneurs. I don't know if you could hear me discussing just now before I went to you, the idea of entrepreneurship, and it's just so lost in America now.
Yeah, it's you know, there's an interesting study of all-time low rates of formation between 25 and 30-year-olds of entrepreneurship. And in the last 5 years, we had 3 years where business deaths exceeded business births. And the one that's most interesting is the average new company today employs 25% fewer people than a new company did a decade ago. That may be because of technology, but it all leads to the crisis that we're having in creating working and middle-class jobs that we so desperately want.
You know, it's funny, too. We look around and see all the other problems, with whether it's crime or, you know, shiftlessness or whatever it is. You know, one of the things that gets you out of that is when you have something you can feel passionate about, when you have a reason to get up in the morning. So you have this idea and you start that cookie company or whatever it is. If you're young, I don't even think they get the joy that can come out of creating something.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, we're facing a crisis that's unique in human history. Some people believe that technology is now advancing so that for the first time, 20% of everybody might be able to build everything that's needed for 100%. What are we going to do with the other 80% of people? And we have this middle class and working class problem. We have low unemployment, but we have even low rates of participation. So the low unemployment masks it. And the problem isn't China or India or Mexico. It's computerization, automation, artificial intelligence. And these are really where the job stresses are. Take Amazon, fantastic company, puts a shopping center on everybody's desk, but 46% of retail jobs have disappeared in the last decade. And we have automation coming with cars and autonomous driving. And with all of these changes, the only thing that's going to save us is entrepreneurs creating new and exciting companies that employ the next generation of working and middle class folks.
Yeah, and it's not just the company; it's creating, you know, from ideas, products or services, you know, that eventually may be gobbled up by the big guys or done more efficiently. But it is about ideas. That's one of the things that makes us human: is thinking, is dreaming, and then sharing.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that's most concerning for me is, there's a proposal called universal income. The idea is that if technology is taking all the jobs, maybe we should pay people just to do nothing. And I can't think of a worse program precisely because of what you're talking about. People want to work. They want to be productive. And they want to have a society in which they can be productive. The last thing I want to do is give people money not to work. Use all those dollars if they're going to be spent on creating great, great jobs and infrastructure in our country. But don't pay people not to work.
No, it doesn't work. Trust me, I have members of my family and some of my producers I pay, and they do nothing, and it's a failed process.
Excuse me, I take
highly. Okay, very little. They do very little. Okay. So, Michael, how do we first of all, inspire? I think telling stories helps, but how else do we inspire? What would some of the successful entrepreneurs say?
You know, first of all, Successful Entrepreneurs, the title of the book, Think Bigger, comes because the great entrepreneurs just naturally, constantly think bigger. They go from one falling ladder to the next. They have this grit that keeps them going. So part of it is personality. And one of the things that I just want to stress is not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur. You have to have a certain kind of fortitude. And if your career anchor is security, you probably shouldn't be an entrepreneur because there's a lot of risks. But most entrepreneurs start a business because they have an idea for a product or a service. It's not just to make money. They're passionate about making a difference, about delivering something, doing something better. So I think coming up with these ideas, look around. Everywhere you turn, you can do something better if you think about it or envision it. And sometimes we get confused because you mentioned Edison, but you could have said Apple. These are the inventor entrepreneurs. But not all businesses are inventor entrepreneurs. Take Five Guys Hamburgers, 2,500 franchises. They just felt they could make a better hamburger that was the best quality, and they didn't want to focus on anything but the food. So the stores are red and white tile. They spent the least amount of money possible and put everything into making the best food and the best hamburger. And in poll after poll, they're voted, you know, best hamburger in the community.
They do great. Yeah, they're good.
So that's just, you know, one of thousands of stories of people who have these ideas. One of the stories I like is in the book I feature Robert Oringer, who is fascinated by diabetes and helping people with diabetes do better in their lives and lead normal lives. And lo and behold, in the weird irony of life, he has two kids who end up having diabetes, and now he's able to provide a life for his kids with better products and new innovations that give them a completely normal life, and they're doing great.
It's funny because I extend the entrepreneurial spirit even to things that aren't, you know, traditionally entrepreneurs, because we think entrepreneurs meaning capital, free markets, you know, for profit. Even people that have ideas for nonprofits, it's, you know, it still takes that passion, number one, or an idea, and then number two, that you actually step off of safe ground on at some point and try it.
You know, you're so right. One of the pleasures of having written Think Bigger is that a lot of social entrepreneurs, that's who you're talking about, are reading it. And we found that it exhibits many of the same challenges when you're a social entrepreneur. You're starting with nothing one way or another. You have to raise the capital. You have to have an idea, and you have to throw it out into the competitive landscape. And you have to have people get buy-in. And whether you're, you know, running a community center, or you have an idea to help people get healthier, or running a hospital or a for-profit business, you need many of the same skills that it takes to be successful.
And you've certainly had your share of businesses as well. Tell us about Tiger 21. What is that?
Sure. Tiger 21 is the premier network, I think, in the world today of first-generation wealth creators that have been enormously successful. So today we have 580 of the top entrepreneurs from across North America. We just opened in London, and our first meeting in Hong Kong is coming up this month. And these members join together in groups of 12 to 15 totally confidential settings. And these are people who are so successful, they're about 1 in 10,000 by level of success. And the group as a whole manages tens of billions of dollars of assets. We're not a manager. Each member manages their own assets. But when you sell your business and you now become a wealth preserver, that's a completely new challenge. Mm. An entrepreneur is totally different than an investor. Entrepreneurs milk one opportunity for everything it has. It's like their child. They don't want to give it up. An investor is dispassionate and has a price for everything they want to sell. And you can be a great investor and a lousy entrepreneur, or a great entrepreneur and a mediocre investor. And this is the place. This is the place where we have a personal board of directors, and each member looks around the table to peers whose only objective is to help one another. It's totally confidential. People are totally vetted. We don't want any skunks in the room.
It's a great idea.
And it's just magic what people can do when they're learning from one another and teaching what they know to one another.
It's a fantastic idea. I'll tweet out a link to it. It's tiger21.com, and that's the numbers 21, not spelled out. Tiger21.com. And I'll also tweet out a link to your Twitter account. It's MW Sonnenfeld. Is that right?
Exactly.
All right, Michael, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Michael Sonnenfeld, author of Think Bigger and 39, Other Winning Strategies from Successful Entrepreneurs, and also founder of Tiger 21.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Well, I've learned one thing, paying attention to the news cycle the last 24 hours, that apparently either PBS or CBS offers Viagra as part of their employee health care package. As part of the insurance, that must be part of the deal that they've worked out. I don't know who they get it through, United, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, I don't know, but they obviously offer Viagra because Charlie Rose has been accused now of inappropriate sexual conduct. Charlie Rose, who is, by all accounts, 2,000 years old. You know what? No, that's not fair. I'm not sure he's actually still alive. He may not be that old. Just seriously.
They're pulling a weekend of Bernie's with him.
That's what I'm wondering, right? Because, I mean, Charlie Rose acts like he's dead. I get, you know.
Well, he's on PBS, so you have to.
Well, even that, but then CBS hires him?
Yeah, that's true.
He is so boring. Like, I get anybody can do anything bad. I mean, you can't judge a book by its cover. So apparently Charlie, you know, according to the allegations anyways, and these are still just allegations, likes him some ladies and likes to target them. If that's true, Charlie Rose? The guy is so slow and boring, and if this guy can be accused of sexual harassment or actually take part in it, it truly anybody can. I mean, isn't he like the last person? Is there anybody more boring than Charlie Rose?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm sitting here thinking.
I cannot think of anybody else. Mm-mm. Is it right? Am I? You're like, yep, okay, good, yeah. good for you, Charlie. You're right. I mean, thank God for Charlie Rose. That's what Ryan Seacrest has to say. Because if it weren't for Charlie Rose, Ryan Seacrest, boring level's getting real high on that.
I'd rather listen to my grandmother talk about her knitting club than listen to Charlie Rose.
By the way, I think yesterday he interviewed your grandmother about her knitting club. I think so.
Right this before is... the Antique Rose show. And after Sesame Street.
Charlie Rose. So, all right, here's the basic idea. And if these allegations, and again, these are just allegations, they have not been proven yet, although he has been suspended from both PBS and CBS at this point, the allegations are pretty awful, if true. Eight women have come out and accused him. The Washington Post interviewed three of them on the record, five of them off the record. Ages range from 21 to 37, so Charlie had a...
type?
He's had a pretty wide... I guess he's old. It's like anybody younger. I like younger women, which means...
So that's a pretty
big I was going to say, I like younger women.
That's a good range, though. 21 to 37,
yeah.
That's a good range.
He's like, I like younger women, so I like women. And Nancy Pelosi, she's looking pretty hot, isn't she? That younger Nancy Pelosi. Anyways, of the eight women, and some of their accusations overlap, so don't be confused by the numbers I threw out, but most of them said he alternated between fury and flattery in his interactions with them. Five described him as putting his hand on their leg, sometimes their thigh or breast. Two said that while they were working for him at his home or while traveling with him on business, he walked around naked in front of them, sometimes having gotten out of the shower, sometimes I'm just going to put on a robe but not tie it. I mean, you're sitting there on the computer and Charlie...
I done that. I forget to tie it.
Yeah, when one of your coworkers is there?
Yeah, I forget.
One lady said he groped her buttocks at a staff party. One said that he tried repeatedly to put his hands down her pants and she began to cry. And then he was like, hey, baby, what's she crying for? I'm paraphrasing that, by the way, but that was the sentiment anyways. One of the women said that he groped her. When she was an intern, she said everybody's terrified him. He creates the environment of constant fear. One woman said he repeatedly called her at night and early in the morning to describe his fantasies of her swimming naked in a pool. His pool, by the way. And his longtime producer, they said, knew about this and just said, oh, that's basically just Charlie being Charlie. Just Charlie being Charlie. So now allegations against him and it doesn't show any sign that it's slowing. Wow. Crazy. Charlie Rose now accused. If you'd like to join the program, 888-727-BECK, or you could tweet at the program, please follow at Doc Thompson Show.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck. You can join the program, 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK, or online. Join me on Twitter. It's at Doc Thompson Show. By the way, Facebook is facebook.com/Doc Thompson Show. We're talking about the latest allegations. We're not spending a lot of time on it today, but a little bit of sexual improprieties. And the big one last night was Charlie Rose. It's pretty awful, if true. There's a lot of salacious stuff. Some of the other ones have been less significant. You know, people like Ben Affleck, oh, he may have touched me inappropriately as we passed, you know, on the set or something. Charlie seems systematic, again, if proven true. Then we also heard that John Conyers may have settled a case for $27,000 when he was a sitting congressman in Michigan. John Conyers, you remember, they say you gotta pass the bill. They say vote for, was it study the bill? Research the bill?
Read the bill. You have to read the bill.
How are we going to read the bill? That was John Conyers back in the day. Served for, you know, 200 years or whatever it was. John Conyers accused of settling for $27,000. The interesting thing, Conyers' settlement comes out of his, or came out of his budget, his office budget in D.C. Unlike the other 264 allegations for sitting members of Congress over the last 20 years. Over 20 years, Congress has paid off 264 people from a special slush fund that they've created.
Can I correct you on that?
Yes.
Because I wasn't Congress. We paid for that.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Chris Cruz.
We paid for that.
We have paid into this slush fund where congressmen get to act. In many cases, it's probably going to be true, inappropriate. People challenge them on it, and we have paid $17 million to 264 cases. That averages about $64,000 every 4 weeks. Every 4 weeks for the last 20 years, we have paid $64,000 because congressmen acted inappropriately or were accused of it. Just another perk they get. Let me go to the phone lines now in Illinois. Kevin, thanks for holding. You're on the Glenn Beck program. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, sir. Thank you.
Well, let me first state in full disclosure that I am a liberal.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll make that a liberal.
I appreciate the disclosure, sir.
That's fine. So everybody's going to see this through the lens of me being a liberal, which is fine because I see things through the lens of you being a conservative.
And
so,
you know, look, and real quick, side note, Kevin. That's how it's supposed to be. Because my frustration is when Fox and MSNBC and whoever else doesn't admit and lead with their biases, because it's like they're trying to trick people. Whereas, you know, just lead with your bias. Just tell me who you are, you know?
Which is exactly what I did. So I'm going to tell you that my liberal bias says that Al Franken's infraction is not so bad that he should be kicked out of Congress, because I want him in, because I'm a liberal.
Okay.
Now, my liberal bias says that Ray Moore's infractions are severe.
Because you don't want him in.
But not be in Congress. Right. And now we have to weigh these things about how bad the infractions are. If it were found out that Ray Moore were a Jeffrey Dahmer, well, clearly that trumps all political aspects.
Sure. Mass murderer, absolutely.
Okay. But Kellyanne Moore implied that it's sort of okay to assume he might be, because we need his vote.
Mm-hmm.
She did that just a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I would say with Al Franken, it's sort of okay that he did these little jokes and the, you know, faux groping and maybe kissing, because I need his vote.
Yep.
So we really have to see this through that lens.
No, and I agree. I think we have to be consistent with this. And that's the reason I break down each case. And I mean, Al Franken's, half of his have been proven because of the photo. Half of them, the kiss, is not proven. That's still just an allegation. Roy Moore's have not been proven, although it's looking real sketchy for the guy. And I think he probably did based on the, well, I always ask their mom It's like,
come on, man. Right? You know that Ray Moore is guilty. You know it.
Well, no,
everybody knows it.
Well, no, Kevin, this is what I'm saying. I believe he is, although it's still allegations. Half of Al Franken's, I just admitted, I believe he probably kissed her, but that's still just an allegation. The only difference with the picture is we have proof of that. Now, Kevin Spacey, still an allegation. Much of Harvey Weinstein? Still allegations. Most of those are still allegations. I don't know if there's any proof of his. And by the way, Kevin, I would even accept proof in a court of law. So if Harvey Weinstein gets convicted of something, I go, that's proof. If
too
Roy Moore
short.
Does too.
I don't have time to deal with that with Ray Moore. The election's coming in 3 weeks.
Right.
There's no chance for a court of law at that point.
Right.
We have to decide that right now.
I know. It's frustrating. It's likely going... I mean, he's his competitor, Doug Jones, is leading by a pretty good margin by most polls.
Look, Roy Moore is guilty. This is clear. Look at the handwriting. All these handwriting experts. Give me a break. He wrote that in the yearbook. That's obvious. Okay? Maybe the woman added a line about where it was exactly, but this is just a red herring. And you know it.
But,
and everyone knows
Well,
it.
Wait a minute. But you have to admit it's still an allegation, though.
Okay. It is. It can be proven. I don't know why Gloria Allred doesn't submit that to a handwriting expert, because it's obvious to me that it's true. Just
right.
Give it up and let an independent handwriting expert verify that he wrote that.
Now, do you say the same thing? Are you holding, and I'm fine, as long as there's consistency. If somebody says Roy Moore is guilty and therefore should not serve, that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. My frustration is when you wouldn't also include Al in it. I believe... Both of them are just allegations at this point, with that extra caveat that part of Al Franken's have been proven true. So you say that about Roy Moore. You wouldn't support somebody who did that. Do you still support Al Franken serving?
Well, it depends on the severity of his offense.
Okay.
Now, I'm so liberal. So if his offense is not too severe, meaning he did a little joke, this is sort of SNL-type joke, you know, it's bad, but not disqualifying.
The allegations against Roy Moore seem more severe because the allegations...
Year-old.
Right, exactly.
Underage.
Exactly, right.
Way more severe.
Right.
Way more severe.
However, based on what so many progressives and liberals lead with when it comes to allegations about, you know, the whole Me Too campaign... and how women are second-class citizens and need the extra attention, whatever, I would say, based on your philosophies, Al Franken needs to be held accountable even for the joke.
He does need to be held accountable for the joke. Absolutely. Look, I am not so partisan that I don't think a wrong is a wrong when it's a wrong, okay? But should he be kicked out? I don't think so. If that were true, then half the Congress would be kicked out, okay?
Yeah, well, and listen, I'm fine with jokes like that. Again, Kevin, I'm just looking for the consistency person to person. So if you lead with your philosophy
it's
that...
It's not the consistency.
Exactly.
It's the severity.
Well, severity. Well, there's consistency within the severity of all that.
If what Bill Clinton did was true,
yeah,
then he should have been kicked out. And I'm a Democrat. I'm the first to admit.
Okay.
If someone has did something seriously wrong,
right,
even if they're with my party,
mm-hmm,
they have no business in our government, even if it means I lose the vote to what I want to happen. Now, I know that's what bothers me about what Kellyanne said.
You know, and Kevin, you're the type of person that I want to deal with. You're the type of person that I want to have those discussions with, and we can find common ground. If you're willing to hold your own people accountable and parties and people that you would normally support, with as little bias as possible and be consistent like that, that's what's missing right now. You're the type of person I want to talk to. You're my fellow American.
We are all Americans, and I believe there's more commonality between us than most people would like to believe.
I mean, Kevin, we can both admit Glenn Beck's overweight, right? I'll take that as a yes. Kevin, thanks for the call. Have a happy Thanksgiving, buddy. What's that?
Really?
Well, I'm trying to find common ground here.
And you find it on saying that boss is fat?
I didn't say fat. I said overweight. He's
okay.
Big bone. He's big bone. He's husky.
Does
That's
he also
all.
Have a fatty liver?
He may have a medical condition. I don't know. I'm just saying overweight for his own concern. You know, for his own health, I'm concerned about this. That's what I meant. Well, I couldn't start with one of the more nuanced ones. You got to go to the obvious thing, right?
Wow.
I mean, okay. We can all admit that the fourth Indiana Jones should not exist in his reprehensible Cal. Am I right?
I don't even speak of it. I don't know any fourth.
Exactly. See, that's what I'm saying. You got to go with those big ones, and then you get closer and closer to the more difficult ones.
I disagree with your last statement completely.
Yes. Our boss is not fat. He looks great. He's
not overweight at all.
He's fantastic. He's awesome. He's good.
Just letting you go here. Just letting you go.
His hands are very, very slender as he writes my paycheck.
Yes. Yes. And when he gives me that hug, I literally can get all around him. He can't get around me.
I don't know about that, but.
Oh, really?
Okay, all right. All right. So you're saying Glenn Beck is thin then?
Yes, he's thin.
Cal, do you say he's thin?
I'm sorry, what?
Is Glenn Beck thin?
His headphones are like.
Okay, all right. Working. Let's move on then. All right. Well, I was trying to start with something that was more obvious. Perhaps I made a mistake there. All right, let's go to line 11 now. Bill in the great state of Florida, thanks for calling the Glenn Beck program. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I have a question. Do they realize how much power they gave women? Anyone can hit the lotto or have a successful business, and someone can come from the past and just say, hey, he did this,
that one,
just to make money, and nothing really happened.
Yeah, we've given women way too much power. I mean, that whole suffrage thing, that started the ball rolling, Bill. I mean, that was the... No, I'm just joking. I know what you mean, though. You're right. When if you go back 30, 40 years or whatever, women and many people have a legitimate beef when they say women were never believed. You know, that they automatically didn't believe them. And that's the reason now they keep saying every woman deserves to be heard. The problem is now the pendulum has swung completely the other way, where as long as you accuse somebody, you're believed and it's believed to be true. And that's a bigger problem.
Yep. That's all I had, but you guys are doing a great job, and have a nice Thanksgiving.
Thanks, buddy. Really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. You understand what I'm saying there? It's a bigger problem to accuse people and have that accusation be believed with no proof, no rule of law, no justice system. Now, a lot of this stuff is just tried in the court of opinion, but that's a bigger problem.
The
idea
of the court of opinion
matters because we live on social media, Cal. Everything. You can't even have a restaurant without having it rated by four different apps.
Yep.
Everything is judged like that, and we share this information. The court of public opinion is now as valuable, important, or powerful than it ever has been. Yes, I recognize, as Mitt Romney said, that innocent until proven guilty is for the justice system, the legal system. But shouldn't it also apply in the court of public opinion? Shouldn't it? So while women were not believed and they were victimized, some men were not believed and victimized over the years. And they said, oh, well, I'm not even going to entertain what you're saying about so-and-so touching you inappropriately because I like that guy and blah, 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 and just go away. And that was horrible. That person who was guilty of something got away with it. That's horrible. But worse, to convict somebody, even in the court of public opinion, when they are innocent. I would rather, when we're dealing with the justice system, set free 100 guilty people than send one innocent person to jail. Maybe you disagree. I think that's a pretty good system. So that's the reason when we discuss this, please keep recognizing which claims are allegations and which ones are proven. Half of Al Franken's are proven. She said he kissed her. Without her permission, forcibly, whatever. And then number two, he groped her. The groping is on film. That part is proven. Quick break, back with more. Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The very spelt Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck. On the phones, 888-727-BECK. Let's go to North Carolina now. Bill, line 18. Thanks for holding. How are you? Hey, Bill.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
All right. I wanted to say thank you so much because your heavyweight other partner there, Mr. Beck, I don't think he would ever take on these challenging questions.
I don't think so either. I don't think so. But thank you for recognizing. I got the hard-hitting stuff right here.
So, and I wish we could talk about other things because I'm from Flint, Michigan, and nobody seems to care anymore about our water not being any good. But on this other issue that it seems like the media wants to talk about, on these women and stuff that are coming forward, if, I hate to say it, but if they could show me, you know, not me, I guess, if they could show documentation that, hey, I called the police, I went to the doctors, I did something because it hurt me so much, and they wouldn't listen, but they have documentation. Because just to come out and say this happened, I know when I was young, I was in junior high, and I went out, and this girl from high school, we made out and stuff, and she had me touch her breast. I almost felt now like Forrest Gump. And she gave me a huge hickey, which embarrassed me so much because I had to go in front of my parents. Should I find out she's running for Congress or she's a senator today?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're right. And anybody can gin up anything from the past, Bill. Thank you so much for the call. We were discussing that off the air. I don't know if 20 years ago I said something as a joke or flirted with somebody in the office. They took it the wrong way and all these years have harbored, you know, and felt bad about it, you know. I wouldn't want them to feel bad about that. We have to speak up. If something happens to you, speak up in a nice way. Avoid situations, but speak up. And if somebody does speak up, not in some crazy, ridiculous way, but if they speak up and just say, hey, Pete, can you not, you know, while I'm here, whatever, recognize it and say, okay, and move about your business. Don't get offended by that. Just move on.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Jim was walking with a family friend and his daughter on a sunny day along a pier in San Francisco. If you've ever been to the piers in San Francisco, man, that is, it's a really nice experience. And that's where Jim was, walking with his daughter and a family friend. Just a great day at the pier. All of a sudden, there was a loud bang. And suddenly, something was wrong with his daughter. She threw her arms around him, and she whispered, "Help me, Dad." She then collapsed in front of him. He couldn't figure out what was wrong, and she didn't have any health problems. She was a healthy girl. As she fell to the ground and he struggled to find out what was going on with his daughter, a passerby stopped to help. Suggested they turn her over onto her back. So they did. And as they rolled her onto her side and then to her back, they could see blood. Then they noticed a hole in her back. That hole turned out to be a bullet hole. The loud bang was a gun being fired. Paramedics arrived. They rushed her to the hospital. And she was declared dead. In just minutes, this father was walking with his daughter. Minutes later, she was dead. That is the story of how Kate Steinle died after being shot by Jose Zarate 2 years ago. Yesterday, attorneys began their final arguments in the murder case against Jose. Also yesterday, a federal judge permanently blocked President Trump's executive order to cut funding from sanctuary cities. Judge William Orrick said President Trump cannot set new conditions on spending approved by Congress. Ironic that while final arguments are unfolding for her killer, a federal judge blocked President Trump's attempt to somehow stop sanctuary cities. Now, we can debate back and forth. In fact, we could get great legal minds on, constitutional experts, to say whether or not it was within the power of the president to withhold funds from somebody who is violating federal law, even though Congress has allocated those funds. In fact, I'll even, right now, say he doesn't have the authority to do that. I'll just give that to you. Federal Judge Orrick, if that is the case, so be it. But at least President Trump tried to do something. which is more than I can say for most people in Washington, D.C. now or in the past. At least he attempted to do something. At least he tried to do something that he made a significant campaign issue while he was running for president. Kate Steinle and others have been killed, murdered at the hands of illegals. This is a national security threat as well as a domestic security threat once they're around. Once they're in America. And while people will cite statistics and tell you, well, there's a bunch of studies that show you that illegals commit less crimes than others, than American citizens. Does that matter? If only one illegal commits one murder, you're okay with that? How about if it's your daughter you're walking with on a sunny day that gets murdered? Then I'll bet you're not as okay with it. The truth is, it is absolutely within the power of the United States to decide who enters our country. It is absolutely within our power. It is moral, it is reasonable, and it is logical to know who's coming into America. It is also reasonable and logical and certainly not hateful to limit who comes in America. We should have an open and active yet monitored border. A border that allows people to go back and forth, coming and going for the purpose of commerce and travel, vacations. Absolutely. But we got to know who it is. We live in an increasingly dangerous world. And it's ironic that so many people that support the idea of sanctuary cities and tell me that, you know, they commit less crimes than American citizens are the same people who tell me that guns are a problem. They're the ones going after specifically just guns. They're willing to go after one way you can kill people, one way you can be violent. Because of their agenda, but in typical lack of consistency, aren't willing to go after sanctuary cities that help protect and promote illegals who quite often perpetrate violence on American citizens. Jose had been deported 5 times. He was awaiting his 6th deportation. He was homeless in San Francisco at the time of the shooting. He had just finished a prison sentence for illegal re-entry when he was transferred, not out of the country, but to the San Francisco County Jail to face a 20-year pot charge. That's when they decide to let him go. Why did the sheriff let him go? Because of their sanctuary city status. Because of that policy, it limits cooperation with federal immigration authorities. So if he was held on some immigration issue, he was in the country illegally, they were not going to keep him. They were not going to turn him over to the federal government. They were not going to cooperate. So, you don't support sanctuary cities. Fine. How do you propose we protect the Kate Steinleys of the world? And what's it going to take for you to get it? Do you have to be walking with your daughter or son on a sunny day and see them get murdered in front of you? Is that what it's going to take? I'll bet for some people it wouldn't even take that. That even if that happened, they still wouldn't get it. So while we're debating what should happen to Jose, Congress is floating the idea of amnesty. In the middle of all of this, her killer has still not been brought to justice. And by the way, her story is not unique. I mean, you could go to the Remembrance Project. They calculate, or excuse me, record. They record and promote the stories of people who were killed or had violence perpetrated against them by illegals. fighting against this narrative that, oh, they're just here illegally. Nothing else bad happens. Trying to keep those people's memories alive and telling the world that, hey, this is a problem. It's not unique. It's not rare. Whether it's a hit and run and somebody is killed, which I remember when I was still working at WRVA in Virginia, a couple of nuns were killed. Another guy in the community was killed, and I had interviewed his brother about it by drunk drivers. There has to be a way we monitor these people and make sure they're not here doing bad things. That's not immoral. It's not hateful. But Congress, and it's also Republicans, aren't even considering that. You've got the courts that are fighting against President Trump and his actions against sanctuary cities. And members of Congress are not saying, hey, let's come up with some sort of sanctuary city bill because we're the ones that appropriate money and say, if you do this, you will not have money appropriated to you. Where is Congress on this? Their silence is deafening. Instead, they're working on amnesty being floated right now around Capitol Hill. Is another round of amnesty. Now, we know they've been fighting for amnesty for the so-called Dreamers, seeing if they can make them legal, giving them a pathway to citizenship. But there's a bunch of Democrats and even some Republicans that are quietly trying to come up with the proper way to craft a new amnesty message. Look for this. Expect this in the next couple of months. They may try to tie it to some other big bill, you know, a debt ceiling raise or something like that. But they are working on it. Now, I am willing to move a great distance off of my beliefs and what I know is right, the belief that we should not reward bad. And I will reluctantly, begrudgingly, give up the idea of legal of children, those so-called dreamers that were brought here by others, being deported. I will begrudgingly come up with some way we can give them a pathway. Because after all, they didn't commit the crime. Somebody else did. But that has to be part of a deal where we kick out everybody else that is here illegally. I'm not willing to give an inch on that. Somebody has to be held accountable for coming here illegally and for those dreamers who brought them here illegally. Congress is working on amnesty. Be prepared to fight that fight in the coming couple of months. Your call is coming up next on the Glenn Beck Program.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
It's Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck today. You want to find out about me? The show I host weekday mornings on the Blaze Radio Network. Just go to theblazeradio.com and you can find out about our programs. Right after Kate Steinle was murdered, CNN had a headline that said, Kate Steinle's family files lawsuit after her death on a San Francisco pier last summer. They file a suit after her death on us. Are you missing like a significant part of the story there?
She was killed.
Murdered, not after her death.
No.
And also they filed a suit after her death. Oh, so it was like a lawsuit because there was like a loose board. She slipped on ice or something. Is that what it was?
Had a bad taco.
No, she was murdered by an illegal who was in possession of a stolen government firearm. He committed multiple felonies.
Wait, government firearm?
Yeah, he was. He still think he got out of a cop car, if I remember right.
How?
I know, right?
Seriously?
Yeah. So all of that.
These guys just leave their windows open?
In fact, just weeks after she was shot, there was. I'm not talking about the straining at the gnat and swallowing the camel, you're missing the point here. And certainly a double standard, a bit of hypocrisy. Just weeks after her murder, a bunch of people called for the end of sanctuary cities, of course, right? I talked about it. Of course, it's a problem. It's something we had talked about for years. San Francisco supervisor, that's the legislative body for San Francisco, Mark Farrell, had another idea. He wanted a law that he believed would have prevented or helped this situation. He wanted a law that would require the videotaping of, what do you think it was videotaping? What would you have videotaped?
Video cameras in the streets?
Okay, right. So maybe you don't. The pier,
high
like
traffic
that.
Areas?
No, ammo purchases. You would have videotaped ammo.
How would that?
Here's the thing, it wouldn't. But he believed it would. He said, even though San Francisco has some of the toughest gun laws on the books in the country, there is more we can do to protect the public. To videotape ammo purchases. He said easy access to guns, he said at the time, easy access to guns and ammunition continue to contribute to senseless violent crime here in San Francisco and across the country. As part of the law that he proposed, he also wanted to mandate videos of any place where guns or ammunition is stored, handled, transferred, carried. There had to be a videotape of it. And then firearms dealers who were videotaping this stuff had to keep those videotape records for 5 years.
Good. 5 years. Okay.
And then they had to transmit their weekly data sales, you know, the data about their sales, to the San Francisco Police Department. Because that would
make a difference. Yeah.
Make a big difference. Not going to bog them down in paperwork and videos or anything else.
Yeah, because when I'm going to buy a gun and kill somebody, I'm going to do it within 5 years. just to let you guys know, when I buy my next gun,
I'm waiting till 5 years and 1 month
exactly.
Before I gun people down. You're right? That's why not 4 years?
Yeah.
Why not 3.7? Why not 100 years?
Why not a lifetime?
Why not a lifetime? Right. Okay, he's dead. You can destroy that now. Right? Silly. This is what he wanted. Again, nothing about the sanctuary cities. It was, let's go after the method of killing, not the person who killed. It's incredible.
Can we put
how they've missed
recorders
this.
On police cars?
Might help, right?
Windows?
Could be something like that.
Some trackers on their own guns?
By the way, the law he proposed, this was in July of 2015. Chicago had already tried that. In 2014.
How did it work for them? It worked fantastic, right?
Well, yeah, crime rate's down there, right?
It is.
No, Chicago is about to set another record for murders. They'll be back up. They haven't seen this many murders. I'm going from an article I read a couple of weeks ago. I think in 5 years, they will top. So they've been, for the last, 10 years, the highest they've ever been. And then it's dipped a little bit the last few years, just a little bit, still very high. But this year they'll be back up over the top if trends continue. So, didn't really help them a whole lot, did it? It didn't work the way they thought it would work. All right. It's just incredible you don't get it. That you're not realizing the guy was on the street because you let him go.
And I love when they try to blame the gun as, he stole the gun. So it's not like he went out and bought the gun.
You're right. Are they also going, under his proposal, were they going to videotape the point to where people steal guns?
Exactly.
So any point where somebody's getting ready to steal a gun, you got to have a videotape. And then they could have gone after the cop or whoever where they stole the gun, right? How come he didn't have a videotape up there? Would that have stopped him from stealing it? No, but we'd be able to see it on TV and that would be really cool, wouldn't it? Maybe this is just a media ploy. We really want a record of when anybody commits a crime so we can show it. You know, get us ratings and whatnot. Nonsensical. So here are your solutions. Demand Congress get rid of sanctuary cities. Ban them. Use whatever methods they have. Withhold federal funds. Listen, when I learned to drive and for 10 or whatever years after that, I had to suffer with 55-mile-an-hour limits, speed limits on the highways. Why? Because Congress mandated a 55-mile-per-hour speed limit. Not within their power to do. They simply said, if you want money for transportation, then you're going to go along with it. And every state, of course, did. So they certainly can get this stuff done. How come you're not getting it done when it comes to sanctuary cities? All you have to do is say, you cannot thumb your nose at the federal government when it comes to illegals, something that is within their power, certainly, to monitor. That's within the power of the federal government. Funny about this, that the progressives now are all about states' rights, right? It's all about local government when it comes to illegals. Wait a minute, federal government? No, no, I'm all about the states' rights. Got to make sure where people like me are consistent about what is federal power and what is state power. The solution is demand that Congress get rid of sanctuary cities and demand that illegals are expelled from America. There's your solution.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, I just tweeted out a link to Succeed. Succeed Act, S-U-C-C-E-E-D. Solutions for undocumented children through careers, employment, and education. One of the new amnesty plans the Senate's working on. Tweeted out a link to it so you can read it for yourself. All right, I gotta go off the board here. Okay? I'm gonna throw out the schedule and
you're okay.
Yeah, I need some help here.
All right,
this well. Is really some.
That's what we're here for.
This is something I have talked about over the years from time to time on my little radio broadcast on the Blaze Radio Network. And in the last couple of weeks, brought it up on my little show there a couple times. And during this broadcast, mere moments ago, I got a text message from my wife that started triggering me again. And
I'm okay, because I know she's pregnant. So is everything okay with the baby?
Oh, everything's fine with that. Oh, that's okay, fine good, or whatever.
Good. She has a job?
She does a job. Well, that's fine. Okay. It has to do with the dog.
Oh, your dog.
Not my dog. My stepdog.
Oh, your stepdog. Okay.
And by that, I mean that effing dog.
Oh, wow. You sound like you love him.
This dog has been the bane of my existence. I have had countless pets growing up. Just about every type of dog. Seriously, my parents, we had a farm. We had whatever. I mean, lots of German Shepherds, Doberman Pinschers, Great Danes, Schnauzers, Giant Schnauzers, Irish Setters, Irish Wolfhounds. I mean, get on the list. We've had these dogs, right? I like some of them a lot. Great. We had cats, all kinds of them. Liked them a lot. This dog, though, is a yappy little giant Yorkie. That's not an official breed.
No, but I know which one you're talking about.
It's just he's just a really fat they're Yorkie, yeah. Really big Yorkie. And he's such a pain. Whizzes all over the house, doesn't listen, just is horrible. Anyway, I have suffered with this dog for years now. And I knew this day was coming, but I kept secretly hoping that it wouldn't because something else would happen. Do you know where I'm going? The dog is now getting sick.
But the dog is old.
Yes, he's getting sick. And while I feel bad for my wife because she somehow in some deranged state believes that the dog is a
person,
likable dog.
Oh.
And I really feel bad for her. I don't want her to not have her doggy and she's upset by it. But the money, I knew this day would coming, did come. Do you know how many times people have pets get old and they just, ching, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching? Well, the cha-ching, cha-ching is starting right now. So a couple of weeks ago, and again, I don't want to even see the dog suffer. I don't want any of that stuff. But it started a couple Saturdays ago. She says, got to take the dog to the hospital or to the doctor. It's sick. All right. She comes down a few minutes later and she goes, we got to take him now. She goes, he's not doing well. Take him to the doctor. And they say, got to give him a doggy cat scan. How much is that going to cost? $1,500 to $2,000. And I was like, okay, don't flinch. Don't make a move. Because I don't want to be the jackass. You know what I mean? Seriously, I'm out there working every day trying to put money on for the kids, you know, money on food on the table for the kids and her and whatever. I got responsibilities. That's fine. Work hard and... I don't flinch. Because, again, I feel bad for her. $1,500, $2,000. I don't flinch. She goes, well, they said they could do blood work and try to determine what's wrong with him. It's only going to be a couple of $100s. I said, okay, fine. Get the bill. Or he finishes up the day, get the bill, it's $300. Okay? What'd they say? He likely had a stroke. What are they going to do? They're going to monitor him. So, just monitor him then. Nothing they can do. She said, but they're not 100% sure it was a stroke. Could be one of these other things. And I said, how will they know the difference? Well, they asked again if they could give him a CAT scan so they could determine what's wrong with him. And I said, well, if it is something else, how do the treatment methods differ? They don't. So no matter what, we just monitor him.
There's no doggy rehab, stroke rehab?
Apparently not. Not in this case. I don't know what's going on, but this is what I'm hearing. The solution is monitor him. And I said, okay, so we monitor him, and then what? What happens if it gets, when it gets better? Obviously, he's better. But if it gets worse or continues, what happens then? They watch him some more. So there's no solution out of this. He's just marching to the grave, and that's it, one way or the other. I don't know if it's a day, 17 years from now. I don't know what it is, but that's where he's heading. Okay. So I tried to poo-poo the CAT scan because I'm like, if the treatment methods are different, who the hell cares? Right? What does it matter what's wrong with him? If there's nothing you could do, there's nothing you could just take my $2,000. Listen, I'll find out at the autopsy if you're really that curious, you know? Yes, I know I'm the jackass because of that, right? All right. $300. And I said, okay, fine, $300, peace of mind, wife happy or happier or whatever. Okay. And they've been monitoring. During this broadcast, I get a text message. Dog's in the hospital. He has to be in the hospital for a while. I'm like, hospital stay? What? Well, he's having some kidney troubles and whatnot, and they got to flush him out or whatever, and that's it's going to be $218. Said, okay, is that for the hospital stay too? They didn't get an answer to that yet. So I'm out already $518. Mind you, nothing has changed. From the moment before she said we got to take him to the doctor a couple weeks ago to now, nothing has changed. He's still sick, just getting sicker. The only thing that has changed is $518 left in my checking account. That's it. Now, am I the ass for putting a number on this? I mean, come on. What is the limit? I mean, what is... I'm sorry. I don't view pets as humans. I don't want them to suffer. I'll do what I can within reason. But how much is too much? Cal, if they said you can save him for $14 million... I don't even have $1 million.
I'm sorry, you know.
I don't have $1,400.
He lived a good life.
So there is a limit. Yes. What do most people out there going with $500 is nothing, Doc? Okay, fine. What's the limit for you?
I mean, if it's like if they're going to do something that'll give him some longevity and
okay,
live
that's
for
the
another,
first thing. 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, then I'd be like, okay, it might be worth the money.
I would even do that for my wife, even though I suffer every day that he exists in my house. But okay, fine. I would do
but
that
if you're
her.
Telling me nothing's going to happen, we're just going to monitor him.
So if nothing can happen, isn't even $500 worthless?
Yeah.
I mean, or pointless?
You might as well just put it on the table and set it on fire.
Okay, fine. You mean the money, not the dog. Clarify before PETA
sure,
calls you.
That's
okay,
what you
fine.
Think. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that. But even if they could fix him, because he's still old, he's not going to live another 100 years. Even if he got a clean bill of health today, it's still 5 years, 10 years. I mean, he's old. Okay, fine.
Talking doggy ears or human ears?
So should I take a mortgage out on the house if they say, well, it's going to cost you $50,000 to, you know, keep going through this process every couple of weeks? $50,000? What's the limit? $10,000? $4 million? I don't have $4 million. Am I supposed to just take out a loan for $4 million and pay it off 5 generations from now? I mean, what do you do in this scenario?
It's
because it's not ending. It looks like, I realize this, second time this has happened, every week or two, he's going to have to go in for this little process, whatever they're doing to him, flush him out or whatever it is. So it's like little doggy dialysis or something.
So is the flushing to make him live longer, or is it just because?
I think it's extending his life.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you have something wrong with your kidneys there. But all it is doing is extending. It's not fixing the problem. So it's a maintenance program. So is it going to be $200 every week? $218 or whatever it is? Going to be $1,000 a month? Can you spend an extra $1,000 a month, Cal? Do you got that kind of cash?
No.
How about you, Chris?
Oh, no. Sorry.
Just $1,000 laying around?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know that.
That one.
So I don't know what you do here. Number one, yes, I don't like the dog, and it frustrates me, and I would rather he didn't exist at my house. He whizzes all over the place. He doesn't listen. He's a pain. But okay, fine. For my wife, it's the reason I have just gritted my teeth all these years and move on, ignore it, because she likes the dog. Good. I care about my wife. I want her to be happy. So be it. Fine. Right? I don't have the money. We got another baby on the way in a couple of months. This is so frustrating to me. I don't know what to do. What would you do, Cal? Right now, you're in my situation.
I tell
what would you
him,
do?
Listen, honey, I'm sorry. The dog had a good life. It's time to say goodbye.
Chris, I challenge you. Would he tell his wife that?
You will not, Cal.
I would absolutely tell that.
You will not, Cal.
Okay.
For a couple grand a month, what do you want me to do? It's either we feed our kids and they go to school and live a good life, or we take care of this dog. You choose.
He's not telling. And if he did tell her, he would absolutely buckle under.
You're absolutely not telling that to your wife.
You're crazy.
I'm sorry. I know you.
Chris,
I literally don't have the money for this. You want to put us out of the house, put us on the street?
Well,
I don't have the
money. You can take out a loan.
No, I'm not taking out a loan for a dog.
Chris, if you were still married, sorry, what would you do in that situation?
Oh, and that one, since I was a dog handler and dogs were my thing.
Listen, what you do in the privacy of your own home.
Yeah, we don't need
oh, you mean
as that.
Part of your military service. You're a cop. Your canine unit.
Yes.
Okay, wow.
So,
I thought we were going to have some weird Harvey Weinstein thing where the dogs are all testifying against you. Okay, show us, Lassie. He's trying to tell us something. Chris touched you where? He touched you where? By the old mill? Show us on this smaller Lassie stuffed dog where Chris touched you. Okay, anyway, so you're a canine unit.
Yeah. Basically is, well, since I was the one in charge of the dogs, I'll be like, all right, buddy, let's go to McDonald's, get you a big double cheeseburger. And
that was it?
That was it.
And you put him down?
I put him down.
I don't know. I want to know how you put him down. I'm not going to ask that, but wow.
He just told you, double cheeseburger.
Double cheeseburger, put him down.
What's the method of putting him down? What does he die from?
It's in the double cheeseburger.
Oh, it's in the cheeseburger.
It's in the cheeseburger.
By the way, as I keep getting older here, and Chris is significantly younger than me, if he ever takes me to McDonald's and says, hey, buddy, ready to go to lunch, Doc?
You want a cheeseburger, Doc?
No, I want a double cheeseburger. Here you go, buddy. I don't want to see it coming, by the way. All right, right here, right behind the ear. I don't want to see it coming. All right,
trust me, as long as you're eating the double cheeseburger, you're not going to see it coming.
Well, listen, I don't want it in the cheeseburger because I don't want to taint it. If it's my last meal, I want it clean.
Oh,
baby.
No, it's going to taste fine.
Okay,
yeah,
it's fine. I'm serious. This is so frustrating.
But
for
in all
me.
Honesty, have you sat down with Yuna and said, hey, honey, you know, what is the limit? Like, you just asked us.
I just texted her and said, I need to know, like...
It's a serious conversation.
Right. I mean, if I knew, you know, a month from now, I look back and I go, wow, it cost me $518. It was an end-of-life thing, whatever. Fine. Done. I move on. I'm not upset by it. I'd rather have the $518, but I can just, okay, fine, whatever.
What if he's got to go for kidney flushes? It's going to cost you $500 a month, and he'll live for another 5, 6, 7 years.
Okay. In my opinion... Yeah, I didn't want him there when his kidneys worked fine, and I wasn't paying the $500 a month. Okay, I'm sorry. It's cheeseburger time. But to make her happy, fine, but there's got to be some... Okay, so I look at it this way then. Honey, you want $500 a month to go to this. Fine, I got no problem. Where are we getting it from?
Ooh.
That means you got to cut back on something
question.
Else.
Yeah.
Clothes? Are we going to keep the thermostat down at 58?
No, you, Doc, have to cut back.
There's nothing back. I'm into the bone already. Sorry about that. I got to cut back...
The coverage of bear.
Look at how I dress.
Very
look
stylish.
At it.
It's homeless
like
guy
it.
Chic.
I cut my own hair. I have a Flowbee for Pete's sake. Right? I'm serious. I'm doing my own dental work. I'm serious. This is what I'm doing. There's nowhere else to cut for me. I do for them. Go buy what you want. And I'm happy to provide that way.
From now on, you only eat breakfast and dinner. We're going to skip lunch.
Hear what he does?
I skip lunch. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm out. I mean, it's really getting down to
We just raided GB's fridge.
I know. If I don't eat his stuff, I've been making my own clothes out of GB's couch cover here. I'm in his dressing room, taking off the fabric from the back. He hasn't even pulled the couch out yet to see it. This is where I'm at. All right, I got to get a break in, try to figure this out. Oh, more texts are coming in. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. That's all the text messages are doing for me now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck, and I know my practical nature is actually going to make people outraged, I'm sure, people that are pet lovers. Just so frustrated by this whole thing. But hey, if you want to tweet some advice to me, please follow me on Twitter. It's at Doc Thompson Show. I'm serious. I really don't know what to do. Again, if it was $500 out the door or something, I'd be like, absolutely, makes you happy, whatever. But this is ongoing. We just can't afford it. And I don't know what to do in that case. By the way, during our morning radio broadcast on the Blaze Radio Network, we always offer people some free time to promote their businesses. We just like help people and help build businesses grow. It helps you. It helps America out with more entrepreneurial spirits. Coming up this Friday on this radio broadcast, we're going to give you some free time. It's going to give you free commercial. You call up on this Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and we will give you a minute or so to promote your business. So be prepared. And if you would, please use the hashtag Building America even now. Start promoting your business on it now. And then if you miss any calls, you're like, I didn't get the name of that business. It sounded great. You can go back through and look at them later. If you don't make it through on Friday, you can keep using the hashtag Building America and other people will go through and see. So it's kind of a community right there with that hashtag. We'll be with you tomorrow as well. And then everybody off for Thanksgiving. It's going to be a bad Thanksgiving, what with dead pets in that.
That's, double cheeseburger. Okay. Just do the double cheeseburger.
Yeah, we'll see if I can pull that one off. Have a great day. It's Doc Thompson in for Glenn Beck on the Glenn Beck Program.
Glenn Beck.